From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made earlier this month at the Blue Cross Arena. It was a job fair, not an uncommon thing. We see those in our community. But the Democrat and Chronicle editorial board noted that there was something that stood out. They wrote that too often we depict city teenagers as being involved in crime or loitering on streets or not working. But that day at the Blue Cross Arena, more than 1,000 teenagers filled out applications and met with possible summer employers. They want to work. And the paper notes that in the 1990s, more than half of kids aged 16 to 19 had a job during the summer. In 2015, that number was down to 34%. And it's not necessarily because kids don't want to work. At least part of the reason is that there are fewer opportunities. We know that the graduation rate in the city of Rochester has been a problem. We know that when teens can't even get part-time jobs during high school, they're less likely to graduate. This hour, a look at the programs that are helping kids find work, get on the path, and eventually graduate. And there's a lot to talk about from a lot of different angles. And I would tell our listeners this hour, we want to hear from you as well. I mean, there are a lot of voices that I want to listen to in this room, but I want to hear from you about your own experience and the impact of work. You know, maybe you work for a company. Are you hiring summer work? Is your company willing to hire kids, teenagers? You know, Bob Duffy, not that long ago from RBA, said that he wanted to see more employers commit to hiring at least one person out of poverty. And you know, that was well-intentioned. We'll revisit that in a future conversation. So there's a lot of well-intentioned efforts, but are we doing enough to make sure people, especially people in need, and this summer teenagers in need, have those opportunities? Let me welcome our guest for the hour. Megan Wagner's here. She's the director of the Hillside Work Scholarship Connection Jobs Institute. Eddie Cassano's here as well. He's a participant in that program, and he graduated Saturday from East High School. So, Eddie, welcome to you, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And Megan, welcome to you as well. And we'll be talking to you about what Hillside is doing as well. So thank you for being here. She's sitting next to Antoine Williams, the director of youth services at Rochester Works. Antoine, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Shantara Randall's here, program coordinator for teen empowerment. Shantara, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Eunicia Calloway is here. She's a student at Young Women's College Prep and a youth employee at Teen Empowerment. Eunicia, welcome to you
thank
as well.
You.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Eddie, you graduated Saturday. How's that feel?
I'm nervous. It's an exciting moment and something that I'm very proud of.
Well, you should be proud. And what are you planning to do next?
My future, I want to become a firefighter. So what the next step ahead is, I will be attending MCC to get my fire prevention technology associate's degree and take it from there. I took in my civil service exam. And I'm just waiting to hear back results from that.
Good for you. Well, first of all, you've got a great path. You've got a very clear idea of what you want to do. How old are you, Eddie?
I'm 17 until July.
17?
Yes, sir.
Good for you. You got involved with Hillside when?
I got involved with Hillside when I was in my eighth grade year.
Okay. And how did that hookup happen for you?
When I first started, it was just like I didn't know much of the program. I just knew that a lot of kids in my school were getting help through Hillside. When I first started, they did a lot of enrichments, make sure that students were paying attention in class. When I got to my ninth grade year, I found out that they actually helped you get a job, you know, get you job ready, as they say. When I turned 15, I got into this YETA program, which is through Hillside, and they got me job ready. You know, they helped me make sure I knew how to make a resume, cover letter, make sure that I was on time. And, you know, throughout that time, it was very hard for me. You know, I was trying to help my mom pay bills and things like that. And I found that Hillside was a way for me to achieve that goal.
Well, Eddie, you can tell me as much or as little as you want. I'm just going to ask because you mentioned that you wanted to help your mom out. Mm-hmm. Your own family situation, when you were in 7th, 8th grade, were you a pretty solid student at the time?
7th, 8th grade, I was on the borderline, you know. I maintained a high honor roll, but I wasn't as focused in school as I was when I entered high school, 9th grade year. A lot of ups and downs, you know, especially a kid coming from a city school. a lot of people were looking down at me just because I was a minority coming out of the city school. But, you know, I found people that supported me and gave me that extra support that pushed me to the next level. And that's what really helped me get through.
All right. So you were – your first job happened when you were how old?
I was 15.
15. Okay. Yeah. So a couple years ago. And what was the job?
I'm a proud worker at Wegmans currently for 2 years now. And that was my first job. I started as a cashier. And I loved every minute of it. As soon as I walked in through those doors, I was just in love with it.
Part of what we're here to talk about today is the impact of work and helping kids, teenagers, find jobs, productive jobs that they can kind of help build toward graduation. Sometimes that means, you know, going to school and also working. Did you, Wegmans was a job that you, has that been year-round for you?
Yeah, okay. It was actually kind of hard a little bit at first because I was balancing schoolwork, work at Wegmans, and even sports. That, you know, I had three things on me, and I was just, you know, going at it. And
how do I find time for all this, right?
Exactly.
Welcome to the rest of your life, my friend.
I learned that lesson,
and which is great. But what I'm curious to know is, when you're around that age, 14, 15, 16, 17. Do your friends, do you see most of the people around you, do they at least want to work in the summer? Do people want to work? Do most people work? Can they find work in the summer?
In that age, you know, a lot of people wanted to work, but they just didn't find any opportunity to work, you know, and that's something that really held them back. But, you know, it's like I told them and I tried to advise them, you know, look for every opportunity you have. You know, there must be a program or something out there that is willing to help you. You know,
what worries, you know, me and I think a lot of people is that you hope that there must be something, but there seem to be fewer opportunities than there were a number of years ago. In a second, I'm going to ask Megan Wagner about that. But let me just also ask you, Eddie, what do you see happening for peers, people around your age group who want to work in the summer or at least give it a shot, can't really find anything? What do they do?
Well, I mean, if they take the opportunity and make the best of it, I mean, they're gonna see the light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, I had friends that actually came to Hillside with me and didn't finish their training, their YETA training, either because they were either too lazy to come or they just felt that that wasn't for them. But it's like I tell them now, you know, if you would have stick through it and been through it from beginning to end, you would see that a lot of good stuff comes from that, you know, and I hope that young people like me don't get discouraged because the first door they try is they close it on them, you know. Keep trying, keep looking for opportunities, and that's something that really, you know, you need to be persistent. And young people now, they need to have that trait in them. If you're not persistent, you know, and keep looking, how are you supposed to do good for yourself, you know?
Well. Your story is an inspiring one, and I hope we can see a lot more like it. I know Hillside works with a lot of students just like you. We've heard these kind of success stories. Megan Wagner is the director of the Hillside Work Scholarship Connection Jobs Institute. And Megan, you know, Eddie's saying, you gotta think that there's something out there if you work hard enough to find it. My worry is that based on what I've read, based on research, based on some local reporting, Democrat and Chronicle and elsewhere, that there's a little bit less than there used to be 20 years ago, and that sometimes companies need a nudge to do that. What do you see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first of all, how awesome is Eddie?
Yeah.
I just want to say that.
It's a great story.
And Eddie's, I would say, fairly typical for our students at Hillside Work Scholarship Connection. There's some challenges going on working in our program. We hope that you can help meet us halfway, and it is a support. It's also a bit more of that leg up, that access and opportunity. So we call our employer partners a facilitated but competitive process, right? So employers, Wegmans being our number one employer, as Eddie is an employee there, we have anywhere between 300 and 350 students across the greater Rochester Wegmans stores working. U of R, TOPS, we've just engaged Target and Henrietta. We're really excited about bringing new employers on, but it does take, outside of Wegmans, who's been one of our champions across the board for the program, it takes a lot of conversation, persistence, sometimes educating employers who have not employed minors before on what labor laws are like for minors and what that means for them. And how can we not only educate them, but support them through onboarding a young person? And so that it feels like a risk to the employer sometimes. If I can hire an adult that's more flexible to me, can work all of my machines, can work whatever hours I need, that feels less risky and more consistent and stable. But when you hire a young person, what we're really trying to advocate is that not only are you building up the experience of a young person, you are really benefiting your business. It should be a business need, first of all. It shouldn't just be a job for the sake of a job. But it should be also the opportunity to help benefit your company through building a pipeline of staff that have already experienced your company part-time. And maybe once they're eligible, they can move to full-time employment and have that experience pipeline for you. But it does take a lot of education. And it is, I couldn't tell you exactly the trends on less or more for youth employment. Antoine probably would know that better than I. But it is critical that we engage our community members and that it's not just youth organizations driving this, but that is our community overall really working towards employment and experience.
When I was 17, I worked for Moto Photo.
Yeah.
You know, and hold on a sec. I'm going to blow Eddie and Eunice's minds here, because there used to be these things. You used to take cameras and film would like come out, and then you'd have to take it to places and they'd have to process it before you could even see the pictures.
Wow.
I mean, like, it was crazy. So I worked at Moto Photo, and the guy who owned it, when he hired me, he said, employing people like you is the worst. That's what he told me.
Oh.
And I said, why? I was 17.
Yeah.
And he said, because you're gonna call off when you don't feel like coming in. You're not gonna be reliable.
Right.
I think it was his way of making me feel like I better not be.
Yeah.
That, but I never forgot that.
Motivating.
And I hear you saying there's an educational process to convince employers that yes, there are certain things you've got to learn both legally and then just sort of dealing with
youth
teen
culture.
Employment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it's still worth it to our community, isn't it?
Yes, it very much is so. And you know, we're talking about all these new jobs that are coming to community that are maybe degree prepared positions, but it's been getting increasingly difficult to find the talent pool within our community. Well, if we're not preparing them within our community, how do we expect them to be able to take those opportunities within our community? So outside of just general job readiness training, we call those the soft skills, that I didn't get taught in high school. I didn't get taught that in college. I kind of had to learn it through trial and error, and a lot of error. You know, when you answer that question of, tell me about your weaknesses, and you say, well, sometimes I can be a little bit of a procrastinator. No one wants to hear that, but you think you're being very honest and forthright. So we do a lot on mock interview skills and all that training. That takes a lot of practice, but it also takes technical skills. So I'm excited about some of the opportunities that are coming into our community to really educate our local folks around photonics, for example. And they don't have, we need to know what photonics were. We're trying to really explain that to our young people, get them prepared. This is part of their community. These will be jobs in the future, but it will take more energy from across the board. And again, beyond youth organizations driving it. So,
well, let me turn to Antoine Williams, the director of youth services at Rochester Works, because we've talked about what's going on this summer, what's out there now, and you know, are kids able to get the jobs? So, tell me first of all, what is happening? You know, we heard about 3,000 kids online looking for some of these jobs, and kind of pull us back. Tell us what that is, and what's going on with that, Antoine.
So Rochester Works, in partnership with the City of Rochester, every year we come together to, leverage each other's resources. Prior to 2008, Rochester Works had their summer youth employment program and the city had theirs. But as a result of that, that brought a lot of confusion into the community, because youth would apply to the city, but then they would come to Rochester Works wanting to know, you know, where they stood in the process. So someone back in the day had a brilliant idea for us to come together, create one application, and create one process. Fast forward. So back in January, the application was released online, and you are correct, we had over 3,000 youth apply. But there's a process to that, because anyone can go online and apply. Once they apply, they have to then turn in their supporting documentation, so that way we can figure out who's eligible for what. To be eligible for a city slot, you must be a city resident. To be eligible for Rochester Works, you must meet income guidelines. So depending on where you fall in the spectrum, we will then refer you to a program. There's a mandatory parent orientation so that we can engage the parents as relates to our process. And then to your point, there was a job fair where now we are inviting all those who follow through to now meet the program providers or employers to get a sense of, you know, what was 6 weeks look like for the summer. And so So 3,000 easily turns into 1,500 because a lot of the young people do not follow through. So the old saying, you know, showing up is half the battle. It truly is, you know. And then starting July 11th is the start of or the kickoff of summer employment.
All right. And it's 6 weeks, you say, right?
6 weeks, yes.
Okay. And how many, 750 or 800 or so?
Somewhere between 750, 800 we will employ. And it's all, you know, subsidized employment. So Rochester Works, you know, we're funded by the state. And so at the program level and even working with some of the employers, all of those positions are subsidized.
Okay. Who are, how many different employers are we talking about for these 800 or so students?
I'm going to say about 45, roughly.
What are some of the examples?
So like Unity Health is mm-hmm. one of the major employers that we work with. But in terms of those that the programs that we're funding, where we're referring most of the 14, 15 year olds to, Action for a Better Community, Urban League, now, of course, I'm going to draw a blank. Mm-hmm. Community Place, East Rochester Youth Activity Center, Food Link, and the list goes on.
This is not a complaint. I think it's a question that some people will just naturally have. Mm-hmm. They'll say, you got 800 kids. They're going to work for 6 weeks. They're going to have hopefully a great experience. And they're hopefully going to be productive workers for 6 weeks, right? I mean, right. How many hours a week yes. are we talking about, Antoine?
Well, at the program level, 20 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And then for the 16 and older working with an employer, up to 30, 35 hours.
They're going to be productive employees mm-hmm. for 6 weeks.
Yep.
Why do my state tax dollars have to fund them? How come these companies can't say, that's valuable. We want them. We'll pay them.
Very good question, which I wish I had the answer for you. I will say this, you know, even though it's a very small percentage of the young folks that we connect to the employers, as a result of the young person getting their foot in the door and doing an excellent job, when the 6 weeks end, the employer will then pick that young person up on their dime.
Okay.
But to your point, you would think that that would happen more often than not.
Yeah, I just want to see more employers who don't have to be pushed or sort of incentivized. And I'm not, again, you mentioned some of the companies and some yep. of the organizations. They do some really important and great work, and I'm not demeaning them. I'm just sort of asking the question, can
sure,
we get
yep.
to a point where it doesn't have to be subsidized?
Right.
So, but hopefully, as you say, at the end of the summer, they may be able to continue those relationships.
Yes.
Okay. And that expectation, have you seen that play out? You know, is there evidence that that will happen?
Well, it has happened before, mm-hmm. but just on a very small scale.
Okay. Okay. All right. So what's the metric of success then, Antoine? How do you decide that this is working the way you want it to?
Well, in terms of retention, those who, once they start the program and finish it to the end, we're looking at 95%.
Wow. They'll do all
plus.
6 weeks?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, you know, if I could, you know, tell a quick story. I, too, went through the summer youth employment program when I was in high school. And so, you know, just the impact it has had on me was, you know, fast forward, I'm the director of the program now. So I come from humble beginnings, went through the special education system. And as a result of having a caring adult in my life, and multiple of them, I was able to overcome some of those barriers. So I went from being in the program to when I was in college, I ran a program for two summers in a row. And then when I finished college, I connected with the funder and became the program monitor to monitor the program that I once ran, that I was once in. And then six promotions later, again, now I'm overseeing the entire process. So, you know, so there's a lot to be said when you give a young person a chance, mm-hmm. an opportunity, and that's what's lacking.
You mentioned that you had a caring adult in your life and that you came from humble beginnings.
Yes.
People who you know, we talk a lot about privilege on this program, mm-hmm. and kids who come from more humble backgrounds, their life can go in a lot of different directions. What do you think was the most important factor for you to have ended up sitting here as the director of the program, the best dressed man I've seen this year?
True.
I mean, all the different directions that could right. have gone. What do you right. think was the number one factor for that?
Number one. Wow. Can I give you two?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So for me, I recognized that I had a learning disability. So I sought help when I needed help. Number one. You know, you can't get help if you're not putting yourself out there. And a lot of our young people, they're scared to you know, put it out there that they're struggling with something and they need help. So that's number one. Number two, a lot can be said about having supports in your circle. So for me, it was like 6 months before graduating from high school that my resource teacher said to me, "Hey, Antoine, what you gonna do about college?" And to be honest with you, I had no clue because no one in my family, you know, graduated from high school or college, things of that nature. So so I was clueless. But, you know, as a result of Ms. Dombrowskis, I will never forget her name, sitting down with me and getting teary-eyed, right, about how much potential she saw in me, I went to college because of her. And not only did she say, "Hey, you should just go," and just left it at that, she made the connection. So she actually, you know, walked the talk. So she connected me to Nazareth College, to their HEOP program, brought me on campus, you know, where the other young people, college students, showed me around. I was able to see it, taste it, smell it, envision myself being a part of that community, and the rest is history.
Well, that's another great story. And where, what do you see? Are you going to be in this program for a while? What do you see as your own future now? I stumped you there. Of all the things you got ready for the show.
You know, my goal is to continue to build our youth system at Rochester Works. I want to continue to enhance it. I want to grow it. I want to get rid of some of the red tape. Because we work with, you know, at-risk youth, you know, and let me tell you, there's a lot of paperwork that's involved to get someone enrolled.
It sounds like you think there's too much.
Oh, no question about it. So, you know, anything I can do to streamline systems, to leverage systems in order to engage and connect young people to opportunities, that's my goal.
Well, before we turn to teen empowerment, and we're going to learn about what they've been doing, let me grab a phone call because we have Mel in Penfield on the line. Go ahead, Mel.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a nurse practitioner, and I just want to give a shout-out and thanks to Hillside Works Scholarship Program and Wegmans because I have patients who participated in those, and it really has been a pleasure to watch them grow from early childhood to participate, and they struggle. They're city kids that have struggled in their learning environment and their home environment. But I think the Hillside Works Scholarship Program, and thanks to Wegmans who employs them, has been a real asset in their life. And I want to be thankful for what they do for this community.
Mel, you've seen some pretty good stuff, it sounds like.
Yeah. I work in family medicine right over there on South Clinton. And wonderful practice for families, but a lot of our families do struggle with some of their social environments and the disadvantages they've had throughout life. But programs like this, I think, really give them a leg up, as Ms. Wagner said. And I think it's been a joy for me, because I've been doing this for so many years, to watch these kids grow up and have an opportunity like that through the scholarship program and Wegmans employment.
Well, Mel, thanks for the phone call and for that vote of validation. I appreciate that, and I know Megan Wagner does as well. So let me turn the microphone over to Megan Wagner. She's the director of the Hillside Work Scholarship Connections Job Institute. How many students are we talking about now, Megan?
So we have enrolled in Rochester through Rochester Region, which includes Rochester City, all the post-secondary schools in the city, Gates Chilai High School, Greece Arcadia High School, Rochester Career Mentoring and Charter School. We have about 2,200 students enrolled 7th through 12th grade. We have between our 10th and 12th grade, which is really the employment years, right, 16 and up, are 465-ish right now. So of our 10th through 12th graders that are eligible to work, we are looking at about a third of our students. And again, it's about meeting those metrics. So the young person has to kind of bring themselves to the table as well. I think Antoine talked about this,
yep.
The paperwork. You've got it's cumbersome and it's a pain, but you've got to get through it. And I think elements of that do show your commitment and dedication. That's something that shows the employer too, right? So when you went through, Eddie went through his process, online applications. Sometimes they now have screenings for employees, right? That includes minors, adults, whomever is applying. Those processes can feel tiring and feel like another step to reaching your goal. But it shows also the employer that you've got that commitment and that discipline and you're ready to stick with it.
And look, so. I absolutely appreciate that, because if it is sort of a cumbersome process,
mm-hmm.
and you're willing to go through all of that, that
right.
is definitely a sign that you want it.
It does.
But I also am sort of sympathetic to the idea that we don't want to make it We don't want to add barriers that we really don't need. And Antoine's Absolutely. Point was he thinks it's a little too much red tape. Do you think it's too much?
I totally agree. Yes, it is. And it's something that I know Antoine struggles with every year and his whole team. You know, and we're seeing more employers add different levels to their application processes. It's a challenge. I get it. And yet we know from the other standpoint, from the applicant standpoint, especially minors who, you know, you may be a difficult test taker, right? And now we're asking you to fill out a whole screening applicant process for yourself, and you can't have support doing that, right? So it's really preparing you for different opportunities and different levels of these new application processes. So that is also an education piece that we give with employers. Is there any way that we can help facilitate this for our young people that may not be used to these types of tests or screening processes? So it can be a challenge.
And when it comes to graduation rate,
yeah,
Megan, you have seen a difference, even within Hillside,
yep,
among students who work versus who don't have jobs?
Yep. So across all of our regions, we're in Buffalo, Syracuse, Prince George's County, Maryland, we have a graduation rate of about 89%. For students that are retained within our program. If you're employed, if you're yet a certified Youth Employment Training Academy and employed with one of our partners, it jumps to 93-94% the last few years.
And those are two excellent numbers to begin with, but
yeah,
why do you think it's even higher on the employment side?
I think it's even higher because there's a whole journey to getting employed, right? So there's that
Very
AAA.
True.
So Eddie had to really meet some, he had to bring himself to the table. He had to be at school. He had to have his GPA at a 2.0 or above. He had to commit to those 25 hours of training in the classroom, which is sometimes a Saturday. It's sometimes a school break.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it is critical that we also demonstrate to our employers that we're putting candidates in front of you that we believe in, that we put our stamp approval of on, that we know are ready, that are ready to take on that school-work balance, which is still a struggle. And then we also maintain support through their employment. So we don't just say, okay, you've been hired, you're now an employee, let it go. Your youth advocate stays with you through that employment process, right? And let's say you didn't show up for work one day because of an exam prep or whatever the reasons are, different challenges in the young person's life, we are all over that. Not only the employer is committing to being all over that, but your youth advocate's all over it. So we create this triangle of communication,
Very
the student
true.
Employee, the youth advocate, the employer, to really lead to success because the young people do struggle. So if you have a no-call, no-show three times, that might mean a termination for some employers. With us, it's really keeping that conversation going because this is about the student's success and the employer's success.
So what you're hearing from Megan there at Hillside and what you're going to hear from Teen Empowerment in our second half hour and what I think you've heard from Antoine and Eddie, I mean, I'll ask Eddie the same question. What you're hearing there is an illustration of why when we see a reduction in the number of jobs available to teens in the summer, particularly teens who may be coming from impoverished backgrounds or more, you know, quote-unquote at risk, we should all be worried because what Megan is describing is a better chance to graduate just by having a job, sometimes just for a summer. I mean, Eddie,
mm-hmm.
do you doubt that? Do you think, I guess in talking to you, I would be surprised if you didn't graduate, if you didn't work. But do you think that, you know, made it more likely for you and for your own peers to graduate?
Definitely. I mean, you know, at work, they hold you to a certain standard. You know, you got to be there early. You got to make sure that everything is done in order before you go home. You know, and that's the same thing at school. You know, who you go to school, you gotta make sure you're there early, on time to class, make sure the work is done in order for you to see the fruits from it. You know,
mm-hmm.
you want the good grades, you gotta put the work in for it. Same thing at work. You want a job, you gotta put the work in there. If you don't do that, then you know, what else is there? You know, and I seen it. You know, I'm the oldest of five. And I'm teaching my little brothers and sisters the same thing. Like, you know, nobody's going to hand things to you. You got to go out there and, you know, and get them yourself. Closed mouths don't get fed, you know. And it's something that, you know, a lot of kids in the city, you know, don't understand that. They think that everything should be handed to them
mm-hmm.
when, in all honestly, there's going to be somebody that's out there that's going to be more hungry for the job, more hungry for the grade, and they have to work towards that success.
Let's get our only break of the hour in, and we're going to meet Eunicia Calloway when we come back here, a student at Young Women's College Prep and youth employee at Teen Empowerment. You also are going to meet Shantara Randall, a program coordinator for Teen Empowerment, which is an organization that is focused in their own way on using employment to help kids in the city and probably wishes they could double or triple or quadruple in size because of the need that's out there. We talked about, you know, Antoine said there were 3,000 initial online applicants that ended up going to 800 jobs for the summer. teen empowerment gets hundreds who want 12, 13 spots. So we're going to talk about that in our second half hour as we talk about jobs, graduation, and improving the path for teens in Rochester on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, first hour, what's going down at the port? Well, the city of Rochester says the plans for development at Shalott are being scrapped. We'll talk about why and what that means for future development in Shalott. Then second hour, a couple getting ready to move out of Rochester, but not for the reasons you think. And they say it's time to end the stereotypes about our city. Talk with you Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I mentioned earlier that when I was 17, the man who employed me at Moto Photo told me that it was teens were the worst, that it was hard to employ teens. And I knew the point he was making. He was trying to scare me into never calling off, and I don't know if I ever did for that reason. But I'd love to hear from you. I mean, wherever you work now, do you support teenagers? Do you support kids who need work, maybe during the summer, maybe all year round? And particularly, are you willing to reach out to kids who come from more challenged backgrounds? Because what we're talking about is the chance to help kids get and stay on a path. In the city of Rochester, they're trying to improve graduation rates. This is all part of that sort of difficult combination. And Shantara Randall is a program coordinator for teen empowerment. Tell our audience again that doesn't know, what is Teen Empowerment, Shantara?
So Teen Empowerment is a youth organization that's based in the Southwest community. We hire young people between the ages of 14 and 20 to talk about the issues that young people feel are important in their community. So that can range from teen pregnancy to education to youth and police relationships. And those young people brainstorm how to effectively make change and create change in their community to address those issues.
Was that you, by the way? Were you one of them?
I was. So okay. I've been working at Teen Empowerment for 10 years now. I started off as a youth organizer within the program.
Okay. What did that mean to you?
It was extremely empowering to be in a program that invested in you as a young person and worked really hard to keep you in that program, to allow you to be a leader in the program as well, and to also have an effect on young people coming up behind you that Teen Empowerment had on me. So it was really important for me to be able to continue that work.
And you guys employ, I think, roughly a dozen, right? 12 or 13?
12 to 13 young people.
Okay. And you get how many people who want those 13 jobs?
So last summer when we did our hiring process, we had 400 young people apply to Teen Empowerment just from the Southwest community.
400?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I've talked to Doug Ackley and Sean Brown, Jennifer Bannister, now yourself from the program. I know you would like to grow it. I mean, that's just a matter of sort of having the dollars and the ability. Right now, that's the most you can do, isn't it?
Right now. I grew up on the northeast side of Rochester, so I grew up Conkey Avenue D area. And just to know the impact that Teen Empowerment had on me as a young person when we used to be citywide, to go back to expanding that and be able to do that to affect young people that may live in the Webster Ave area, the northwest side of Rochester, Dewey area, and the southwest community, it would have such a huge effect and impact on young people in all of those areas.
Well, in a second, we'll talk to Eunice about what she's doing. I want to ask you if you can remember back to your days 10 years ago when you were starting to work for Teen Empowerment. What's different about Teen Empowerment is, you know, we've been discussing companies, are they willing, from Wegmans, which is the biggest Hillside employer, to various organizations, companies in our community, the Targets of the world, all the way on down to the mom and pops. Are you willing to employ teenagers? Are you willing to reach out to teenagers who need that hand to get that first job? That's one thing. But Teen Empowerment, the kind of work, is really specifically focused on teen issues, teen challenges. What was the kind of work that you did when you were there?
So same thing. Many of the issues that I was dealing with as a teenager growing up are the same issues that we are currently still dealing with. Our young people are still dealing with those issues. So that's growing up in impoverished communities, youth and police relationships, the music that we listen to, our educational systems. Those were all of the things that we were focusing on as a youth organizer in the program back in 2006. And now it's 2016, and we're still dealing with those issues.
Eunicia Calloway got one of those jobs. I mean, there's so many people who wanted those. What did that mean to you?
Just being able to, like, get the call to come into the second interview rounds, because we do two interview rounds, It was like, oh, I'm getting there. Like, I'm just coming for the step up. And then getting the call, like, you got the job. Well, them coming to my house, because they came to my house when I got hired. And just, like, seeing their face, like, oh, you got the job. I was like, what, for real? So it was, like, it was great, because it's, like, the work that I do. And Teen Empowerment really helps me like find out who I really am and find out like what my community really is about and how the people in my community like, you know, interact and how we all impact each other in a way. So it's really good. It was really great. So
Meredith in Pittsford, I'm coming to you on the phone in just a second. Hang tight because I want to work through some of Eunicia's story. And how many hours a week? What's the typical week at Teen Empowerment like for you?
Depending on like what we have to do during the week, it could go from, you know, 20 to 25 plus, depending on what we have to do in the week.
And is it, you know, the same kind of challenge for you compared to what Eddie talked about, learning to balance work? You've got to fit in 20 to 25 hours of work a week. You've got other things going on in your life?
Well, Teen Empowerment, they, you know, it's a flexible schedule. So if we have something to do, then we have to let them know. So it's, you know, just being responsible of, like, making a schedule for them to know. So, but the sport, since it is an after-school job, if you played sports, it was either you pick a sport or you pick Teen Empowerment. But so I did basketball for my high school until I applied here, and I had to think, like, do I want to play basketball or do I want to work at Teen Empowerment? And since working with my community was something I wanted to do, I just cut out basketball, and then I was able to, you know, balance my school and my work.
Okay. Well, Shantara, before the program began, I asked what our panelists wanted to make sure we talked about especially. And you brought up the idea that, you know, it's not just a certain class of kids that does work or wants to work, and that, you know, there's people in our community with all sorts of needs and all sorts of sort of talents and abilities to offer. And I want you to tell me a little bit more about that.
I think what makes Teen Empowerment unique is that a young person will walk into Teen Empowerment and it will ask, well, what do I need? What are the qualifications to have this job? And we'll say, nothing. Just show up to the interview process and go through the interview process. So every young person that applies, they get an interview. They get an opportunity to interview. And of course, some young people don't show up to the interview. And so the numbers start to dwindle down after that.
Just as Antoine said. Yep.
Yeah, just yep. As Antoine spoke about earlier. But we hire a wide variety of young people. So we may hire a young person who is on track to go to college and is doing extremely well in life. And then we may hire a young person who's just standing on the corner the day before. And we provide those young people with an opportunity to not only make money and be able to help and support, because we also have young, just alone in this year, we have two young people who have children already in the program. We have a young man who has a 2-year-old daughter, and we have a 16-year-old young lady who has a 5-year-old. And so we're dealing with those young people. We're working with those schedules and helping them to balance out those. So we hire a wide variety of young people. And so more young people come to Teen Empowerment because they realize that, you know, we're not judging them on what their past is or, you know, how well they're doing in school, but we try to connect them to school. So once you become a part of Teen Empowerment, then we encourage you to get into a program or go to school. So we get young people who are on the verge of dropping out or who may have already dropped out, and we attempt to connect those young people to different organizations and programs to be able to assist them in getting back on track.
I mean, think about that. Think about being in your teenage years, having a child, maybe being on the verge of dropping out. You get that job, and maybe that changes everything for you. You've seen that, right?
Oh, I've seen it on countless occasions. You know, our young people, what they want is an opportunity. They want not just an opportunity, but like Antoine spoke about, a caring adult. You don't understand how many interviews that I've been in where I'll ask what's going on or what's happening, and a young person will like pour out their whole life story and all of the struggles that they've encountered and endured in their life, and they're like, thank you. Because nobody really ever asked me why I am the way that I am. And a lot of times, young people are crying out for help. They're crying out for opportunities. And sometimes they're getting ignored, especially when you're not connected to those programs. Like some of our young people don't qualify for Hillside Work Scholarship. Some of our young people don't qualify for the Summer of Opportunities. I had an opportunity to do Summer of Opportunities. And some of our young people don't qualify for those things. So we're giving them an opportunity to reconnect because we know that it is the disconnected young people that oftentimes result in criminal activities are being constantly and consistently labeled within our community.
Boy, really, really powerful stuff. We're going to come back to that in a second. Let me get to a phone call because we've got several waiting. This is Meredith in Pittsford. Go ahead, Meredith.
Hi, Evan. I feel a little subconscious because while I think it's enormously important for kids to have summer jobs and that we should do everything we can to promote it, I just wanted to add a little levity and tell a summer job story that I had that taught me a huge lesson.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Canton, New York, where both of my parents worked for St. Lawrence University, and from the time I was about 13, it was just expected that the kids would have summer jobs. So, among other things, I worked cleaning the cages of the 50 rats in the psych department, but fell in love with the two little monkeys that were also there in the psych department, and one night left the cage unlocked so that the monkeys did, in fact, escape. And I was gently excused from that job after the monkeys were eventually found. And then I spent a summer as a lifeguard at the St. Lawrence-owned Treadway Inn swimming pool. And while the job was a piece of cake, I one day wore a brand new bathing suit that my mom had made for me, and I jumped in the water, and the entire thing escaped. And I arrived at the other end of the pool, 15 years old, and totally naked. But those experiences didn't deter me. My last summer job before I moved on to college, my sister and I were both hired, again by St. Lawrence, to work in the snack bar. And that summer, the school was hosting 200 black city kids from New York to be part of an Upward Bound program. And it turned out that it was a huge, important sort of cultural awakening for me. And we became friendly with some of the kids. We learned their, you know, newest dances. I think that was the summer of the bump.
Oh, man. I don't want to see it attempted, but go ahead.
But even though Susie and I looked absolutely nothing alike, the kids couldn't get our names right. And finally, I said something to this beautiful, beautiful, you know, like 16-year-old black girl, and asked her what was going on, and she said, "Honey, you white people look all alike to me." And I remember having to think about that and think about that and wonder about it, and it was a very important moment. I'm 62 now, but those summer experiences each taught me so much, and they will stay with me forever. Ask me what I did at 30, I can't tell you. Ask me what I did at 45, I can't tell you. But can I remember those summer experiences? Absolutely.
Well, Meredith, thank you for the phone call, and I will say that I'm sad in thinking about how we still have this world where, you know, some of us are going to go off and work and for the first time work with people of different races or backgrounds or cultures. I mean, we're pretty segregated still. You know, Meredith says she's 62. This is, so we're going back 4 or 5 decades. But is it that different? I mean, Shantara, is it that different? That don't we still feel pretty segregated?
It's definitely segregated within the inner city. If you're looking at our communities, we know that the areas of there's concentrated poverty. So it's not all over our city, specific areas. And in those areas are mostly African American and Latino young people. And so there is a fear, too. There's a fear of young people who look or dress or, you know, act a certain way. And that really prohibits employers from attempting to employ those young people because there's a fear. And we have the mentality like, you have to come to the table. We open up the doors, you come to us. But teen empowerment, we go to where the young people are. We're walking up and down the streets. We're giving them flyers. We're telling them when we're hiring. We're always out there with the young people. So they know us. And so we don't have to fear them because we know who they are, because we work within the communities.
Can you lose a job at Teen Empowerment? Can you get fired?
Oh, you can absolutely get fired at Teen Empowerment, but we do understand that we are working with young people who typically are not connected with programs who provide job readiness training. So we have a contract in place, and what happens is you work your way through the contract, so whether that's attitude, behavior, latenesses, absences, you get fired, but you also have an opportunity to reapply. And in the reapplication process, you have to write why you want this job back, what did you do to lose the job, how are you going to be held accountable in the future, and then you sit in a group of your peers, and your peers ask you questions, because you need to understand that it doesn't just affect you, it affects the young people that you work with every single day. And a lot of times young people think, oh, it's going to be easy because they're my friends, these are the people that I work with, but our young people are, they ask some amazing questions to try to hold the young people who have been fired accountable.
Eunicia, when you think about people your age, and you're how old?
16.
I don't know if you've got friends who are working in the summer, but again, I go back to that phone call. I think of a segregated mentality. Some people just think, well, just get a job in the summer. Just get a job, right? And you think about the challenges that people will face, people from impoverished neighborhoods, as Shantara said, from really clustered poverty. You know, do you have friends who want to work but can't or are trying to? Do you see that?
I have friends that want to work. It's just the fact that they don't know how to, you know, do an application mm-hmm. or how to get to the job or have the resources that they need. So it's kind of hard for them to, you know, get the job that they want because it's not where they have access to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just described so much of what the Anti-Poverty Initiative has been working on. Transportation, access issues, you know, understanding just how to, you know, sort of deal with an application and interview. Eddie, you got your hand up. You want to jump in there? Go ahead.
With the transportation issue, a couple of my friends that actually work in my store, Hillside provides transportation to work, and they pick them up at a local library and take them to work and back, you know, which is a resource that's great for students. You know, not all students are fortunate enough to have a car or I don't even know how to take the bus, honestly. And, you know, it's a good privilege to have. And through those connections, you know, you better that young person's life. You know, it's an obstacle that they can overcome. You know, not an excuse, nothing like that. They can use that.
Yep. Eunicia?
Yeah, with the Hillside program, you know, some of my friends say, I have Hillside, but it's kind of hard when Hillside is only through Rochester City School District because there's a lot of teens that are going to, you know, like the inner city charter schools that want to get through the Hillside program, but they can't get to it because it's only for Rochester City School District. And, you know, a lot of jobs don't really provide the transportation, so it's all left on the kid. Even if they do get the job, say, at Wegmans, they have to find their way there because they aren't in the Hillside program.
Yeah, Megan, go ahead.
Yeah, if any charter school wants to have a conversation, we would welcome that. We are in one charter, and we would love to have those conversations because I agree. It is a challenge. Transportation is huge. And I was just wondering if I could comment on the caller.
Yeah.
The other thing I picked up on, besides the segregation issue and challenge that she faced or experienced, I guess, is that St. Lawrence, as an employer, wrapped themselves around that community. So she's a teenager. They got three chances back at one employer, right? And I think that's really what we need employers to embrace as well, is that just like teen empowerment, you have the opportunity to reapply, to prove yourself again. This is about the process and the journey of learning and that development that young people go through. And we cannot work with employer partners that can't get that. If they can't help bring upon that development process with us, it will not work mm-hmm. Because we really need them to understand that and buy into that. But the other piece is, back to the segregation issue, is that these pipelines of young people are helping to meet a business need, which is diversifying their talents, right?
No doubt about
their
it.
Teams. And then again, increasing their management team diversity. So when you talk about leadership, when you start younger, 10 years ago, she's now a full-time, you know, Shatara's now a full-time staff member in a leadership position for the organization she started with as a teenager. I think that's a perfect example. Antoine's story. I mean, these are the examples of young people that can become your leadership in the future. We just have to have that conversation and explore this with us.
Eddie, go ahead real quick.
And I witnessed this myself, the greatness that happens when different cultures come together. It's something that it's amazing. I mean, it's unexplainable. It's something that is just, it's heartwarming. You know, it's, you know, something that's good. It fills people up with joy.
Absolutely.
No doubt. Let me try to squeeze in one more phone call because this is a man who's working in this community. This is Roland. Go ahead, Roland.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Roland Williams. Go ahead, Roland.
Well, I wanted to say first about how much I commend the efforts of Teen Empowerment, Hillside, and wonderful organizations working with our students. I'm a father of three myself, and one thing I really enjoyed hearing during my time was talking about the concept of mentorship and helping students when they have an opportunity for employment, learning about some of the fundamentals. And I wanted to encourage every listener out there that the real need is to get involved in our students' lives and at risk students' lives before they run into some of these adversities. And so I want everybody to maybe mention something, their thoughts about the importance of helping students learn about having a positive attitude, learning how to give great effort in the workplace, understand the etiquette before they enter the workplace. I just wanted to get everybody's feedback on what they thought about the value and importance of doing things preventative before they get a chance to go to a job and maybe not have the skills.
Roland, first of all, I want to say thanks for the phone call, and we need a whole other conversation with Roland because we're going to be out of time. He's obviously done so much in this community. But Eunice, what do you think about that? He's saying before someone's in crisis, give them those skills. Get to them early. What do you think?
I feel like once, if the skills were, you know, give it to a teen at an early age so that they understand how to, you know, build and develop on the skills and, you know, craft their skills into their own, that they can be, when they are in the workforce, that they do have the ability to, you know, use the skills that they were given and use them in a way that will be more effective for them and for the place that they're working at, too.
Eddie? We got about 20 seconds. Go ahead, Eddie.
The quote that goes with that is, smart people learn from their mistake. Wise people learn from other people's mistake. And that's something that mentors do to you.
Well, I will say to Roland's point there, you know, that's, you know, that is a great hope to have, that we're going to be training and laying those skills down. But right now, the reality is there's still a lot of kids who don't have that training. And I just think Teen Empowerment, Shantara, and the group that you're with, doing such amazing work in this community.
Thank you.
I just wish you were bigger. But Eunice, good luck to you. You going to graduate?
Yes, I am.
Well, we'd love to see that. And thank you for taking the time. Eddie, I'm not worried about you. You're going to be wearing one of those white hats responding to calls as the chief someday. It's great.
One day.
Great to see you, sir. Thank you so much. Congratulations to you. Megan, thank you. Thanks for sharing the story of Hillside. Antoine, thank you for sharing your own story and the great story of the Summer of Opportunity. And thank you for being here. So much to share. Good luck to everyone who wants to work this summer. We'll continue those conversations. John Andrus, the engineer. Deprina Goodboldo, the intern. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan. Talk to you tomorrow.